Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Well, it's been a week since recreational marijuana sales began in Massachusetts, and there are still lots of details to work out. One of the two dispensaries that opened is in the small town of Leicester, but the store is so popular that town officials held a meeting with the dispensary owners today to try to figure out what to do about all the traffic. Another issue, banking. With cannabis still illegal under federal law, most banks will not work with marijuana companies. So, in other states with legalized pot, such as California, for example, this means a mostly cash economy, and that creates all kinds of other issues. Joining us to talk about this from San Francisco via Skype is David Downs. He's the California editor for Leafly.com News. He's also the former cannabis editor of the San Francisco Chronicle. Hi there, David.
Good afternoon, Deborah.
Also with us is Jim Smith. He's an attorney at Smith, Costello, and Crawford, which represents about two dozen cannabis businesses in Massachusetts. Hi, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon.
So, David, I want to start with you. California started selling recreational marijuana before Massachusetts, obviously. Can you describe very briefly the market now, and are companies mostly dealing in cash because of this banking issue?
That's right. The business experience in California is that these banking issues are a major headwind. There's, you know, talks about armored cars. There's taxes you have to pay quarterly in cash. And there's issues around access to your payroll as well as emergency loans. We're in the middle of a very big shakeout with legalization in California. And the majority of legacy operators are going to go out of business because they lack access to capital at an institutional level as much as the retail level hurts consumers in terms of merchant services access and ATMs and that kind of thing.
So who's lending to these California businesses right now? Anybody?
There's a wide spectrum of lenders, and they tend to be tolerant of a lot of risk. So you can't walk into necessarily Chase or Wells Fargo and get a small business loan. You're dealing with private equity people like MedMen or others in the space, you know, or also seeing people raise money on the stock market. Canada has turned into a cash spigot for cannabis investing.
I'm wondering, so Jim, your company, as we said, represents people here in Massachusetts who are in the marijuana industry. How are they dealing with financing and banking?
Oh, in a very similar way. There really is a capital crunch. There's very little capital. There's really three sources, and there's only three sources. Either you're very, very wealthy independently. That's the best source, of course, but also the rarest. Or are you going to turn to family and friends, which I would never recommend anybody do, but it is done quite frequently. And then, of course, as David points out, investors. And investors anticipate some rather aggressive returns. And frankly, they haven't come yet. You know, we're just starting here, and we've had medical only until just last week. Mm. And so we're seeing some of the investors putting some real pressure on some of the companies.
You know, David, you mentioned possible armored cars and securities. Is security a big issue? Have you had several instances in California where security has been a problem because of cash-only businesses?
Where we've seen unlicensed, unregulated retail commerce, there has been increasing risk of retail robberies, specifically in Los Angeles over the last generation of medical marijuana law. With legalization has come hundreds of pages of rules around cameras and security guards, and those issues have gone down considerably. Now you're hearing operators say, I don't want to send my guy down to the Board of Equalization with $20,000 in cash for taxes every week. There's a lot of headaches around that kind of thing. We are still seeing incidents of, potential robbery targets. And it's similar to a liquor store or any other place with a lot of cash that's not secured. The whole point of legalization was to move up the level of security.
Right. I want to go back to this financing issue and what we at least have heard about in Massachusetts so far. And I want to ask both of you about it. I know in Boston, GFA Federal Credit Union, it's actually headquartered in Gardner, but it's the only company that has publicly said that it would deal with recreational marijuana companies. Century Bank, which handles banking for some of the medical marijuana companies, hasn't said what it might do on the recreational side of things. But the Boston Business Journal is reporting that Century charges about $5,000 a month for checking services for medical marijuana clients. So, David, are you hearing that in California, that if there are lending institutions that will deal with marijuana companies, the fees can be pretty high?
Very much so. Banks, the ones that are willing to work with the industry, have the industry over a barrel. Cannabis remains federally illegal. It's a Schedule I drug. It's akin to taking heroin dollars. And the regulators at FinCEN are not giving a green light to this. They're giving a flashing red light. Bankers say we're doing 1,000 times the amount of paperwork for our cannabis clients, but where there are fees, there are bankers. And so there's several hundred banks in America, specifically credit unions leading the way, that are baking cannabis clients. And you're hearing stuff about $25,000 retainers just to open an account, or a 12% tax on all deposits on an annual level. And again, this is an equity killer. This shakes out the more than 50% of the mom and pops that created this industry much more than any other force.
Go ahead, Jim. I'm sorry.
In Massachusetts, it isn't quite that aggressive. I mean, Century, you're absolutely right. Century is in excess of $5,000 for an account. Now, you refer to it as a lending institution. We should not mislead anybody. They will not lend. There is absolutely zero credit from any bank, credit unions included, in this country. But they do handle payroll, and they do handle the cash. And we're also seeing, I'm sure David is as well, in California, a lot of debit card transactions. Those work. Credit cards do not. Believe me, I'm not a banking expert. I can't imagine what the FDIC is thinking, but they do differentiate. So you do see, you walk into any one of these shops as well, you see an ATM machine. A lot of $20 bills changing hands in Massachusetts. The issues, though, are very, very similar to California, although I will say, we had a much smaller unregulated industry than what was available was in California. Not that we didn't have an illicit industry. We do, but not quite the magnitude of California. And so I think it's going to be a little easier for us to ultimately get our arms around the illicit portion of this industry and really try to bring it into the normal, you know, banking discourse and business discourse where, you know, transactions become far more common and regulated. It'll take some time. But I think our problems are probably less than the ones David is seeing in California.
Do you think?
That's right.
Go ahead,
The
Dave.
Less clarity there is in a state's laws, the more problems right. There are with normalized access.
Absolutely.
So, for example, in Canada, you have major institutional banks who are already making loans because it's federally legal there. And that's really the drumbeat you're starting to hear in Washington is we want clarity.
Right. What about this notion of a public bank, which I'm understanding is being discussed in California, David? Is that something that might help here?
Los Angeles put a public bank idea to its voters, and it failed in the 2018 midterms. It comes from Europe and I believe North Dakota, where there's been some industry interest banks that'll loan to like just the farmers. The people looking at this saying this costs a lot of money. We don't know how much it's going to cost. And we don't know if we're going to be staring federal regulators in the face when we do so. The FinCEN cares a lot about money laundering, and they take a really hard, long look at cannabis transactions.
Jim, do you
say the idea was floated here in Massachusetts as well? I mean, we have so much in common with California. The idea was floated by the Cannabis Control Commission, just very briefly. It was just sort of a trial balloon. It was rapidly shut down by the governor and many others. So we're not going to see a cannabis-specific bank here.
Do you think, though, Jim, that the Cannabis Control Commission in Massachusetts should be stepping in here and should be trying to do something to help?
I think they are. I think that they're raising the obvious issues here. I mean, cash is dangerous. Nothing good comes of cash. Money laundering, potential robberies, although, as I said, we've had none in our state, fortunately. Nobody wants the people to walk around with tens of thousands of dollars in their back pocket. And so that issue has been raised. The Cannabis Control Commission, though, has really no jurisdiction over banking at all in Massachusetts.
Right.
And other than being an advocate for some kind of assistance, that's about all they can do, and they've done that.
Okay. Jim Smith, an attorney with Smith, Costello & Crawford, represents about 24 cannabis businesses in Massachusetts. Thanks for being with us, Jim.
Thank you, Deborah.
Also with us was David Downs. He's the California editor for Leafly.com News. He's also the former cannabis editor of the San Francisco Chronicle. He joined us via Skype. Thanks for being with us, David.
Thank you, Deborah.
Stay with us. Coming up, exploring the effects of sea level rise on America's coastlines. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.